This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 462, Generating Boat Song. Welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. I am one of your three co-hosts, and I'm joined by another co-host, also named Michael, just like me, while our third co-host, Andy, is away in a secret German location conducting interesting...
But not an underground bunker.
And yes, not an underground bunker. Michael, how are you doing today?
I am doing peachy keen. I'm excited for our topics today while Andy is doing cool stuff. And we miss you, Andy, and we'll have you back next week.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm also traveling a little bit today. So I'm coming to you from the Western North Carolina podcasting headquarters that we like to call a hotel. And that will account for why the sound quality is just a little bit different than usual. But we've got such a cool show to do, and I'm so glad that between Michael and myself, we were able to carve out a little bonus time to do this on an off-schedule, off kind of thing. And we'll start it off with this really intriguing article from Wired.com talking about how humans... Well, shoot, we're flawed, right? We're flawed in a lot of ways. And when we rely upon computers or phones to remember things like phone numbers of other people, we can be a little bit better. We have some superpowers that we now don't need to remember some of those small pieces of data that are important to us in an everyday life. But this article talks about how AI assistants will remember everything. And by everything, we're talking about everything. Michael, do you remember, and this is a long while ago, when we were talking about the life logging stuff from MIT and people wearing these cameras and computers and kind of just basically taking in all data from everything?
You know, you stole my thunder after the beginning of that beautiful intro to say, don't you remember about 10, 12 years ago, there's these guys at MIT... maybe even earlier than that, that had a camera that was on a box around their neck.
I know, right?
And you know, the great thing is, we both remembered that without an AI assistant.
Well, or so we think.
Well, yeah, because we've got the Games at Work and Dog Ear Nation archives of all the podcasts that we've ever done. So they, in a way, are a bit of an AI assistant without the AI or the assistance part.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are happening these days now where there are services that'll basically look over your virtual shoulder at what you're doing on your phone or on your computer or what you're listening to on the radio or television or whatever, and remember all the things. I remember an example, too, that you would have an assistant that could listen to you listening to the radio while you're driving in the car. And if you heard this new piece of music that you're like, wow, that's really cool, you could say something or press a button to tag it. And it was sort of like a Shazam while you were driving so that later on you could then listen to it. So none of this is super new, but it is going to be more and more of the everything you do. So everything can be logged. And and we talked about Rewind, too. So remember the conversations we had about that a while ago. I don't know how long ago now anymore, but it's been a while.
I think that was 3 or 4 years ago, because that was the desktop application that kind of hoovered up everything you were doing locally and allowed you to jump back and say, who was I meeting with last Thursday? We were looking at some charts, and I can't remember the topic. And it would kind of go through its
right.
Basically captured, you know, every second, every couple of seconds, incremental differences of everything on your computer and built that time-stamped archive in order to allow you to do that, which was, again, really cool. But what it got to me is a point that's made kind of late in this article. I was surprised how late in the article they talk about is the fact that you end up with this incredible trove of really sensitive and personal data
right.
that is just desperate to be hoovered up by everybody, and also becomes an incredible source of value both for yourselves and for others.
It is. And boy, what a nice setup for the next several, you know, things that we have in our lineup today. Hoovering up data. Gosh, that almost sounds like a show title, doesn't it? So the next one on the list is an article from The Verge that Andy shared with us. I'm so glad he did, right? This is about the Humane AI Pin. And there have been a bunch of articles in the last several days that have been reviewing Humane's AI Pin. And many of those articles come to the same conclusion as this one from The Verge does. And that is, it doesn't do what it needs to do well enough just yet to justify the cost. It is a 1.0 kind of experience. And as a 1.0 experience, that is not what is going to really take the market by storm. So if you're expecting it to be able to call somebody, or you're expecting it to be able to answer a question because it's connected to a large language model behind the scenes, you kind of want those basic things to work with regularity, right? And the author of this article, just checking who it was here for a minute, David Pierce, was saying, hey, you know what? Try to use it a lot. Again, Michael, reminds me very much of you, and as you are an early adopter with the things you adopt early, you try to use them to their maximum extent to understand where the limits are and then kind of scale back to what is it good at. And right now, the answer seems to be not good at enough things to really warrant the expense and the use of it.
I actually thought he did a really good job. There's about a 20-minute video accompanying the article that I spent some time last night watching. And he did a really good job of not just talking about the cans and can'ts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the earliness of the software. But he kind of goes through in detail the rationale for those comments that are made in the article, as well as demonstrating things. And to me, there's a couple of tiers of things going on with the AI pin, the Humane AI pin right now.
Mm-hmm.
One, there's the obvious latency of having the model and all the AI in the cloud, right? So you've got a cellular network connection that has to encode the value locally on the device, send it off to a server in the cloud, do the query, interpret the query, and send it back. So the fastest thing that it did that actually used AI was like 5 seconds. And 5 seconds is an eternity when you compare it to what you do now if you physically have your phone out in your hand.
Yes, right.
The second thing was, you know, where it would say a service was unavailable, even though it is part of the initial release. And to me, I think, you know, you and I both work in the software industry as such, or the technology industry. And, you know, sometimes, especially if a product is going out the door faster than you expected, or you didn't do your initial planning correctly, you may have scale issues.
Yes.
So I don't know if the feature didn't work or if it just happened to be a glitch in the network, a scaling issue, you know, some kind of redundancy problem, et cetera. And then the third thing that he makes a point at the end, which he says, you know, it's a low bar, is he goes, and it's not much different than what you can do today with a cellular attached Apple Watch.
Yeah.
And Siri.
Or AirPods.
I know the device now.
Or AirPods, for that matter.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But the AirPods require that you have a phone with you, right? It's
sure.
saying the cellular attached Apple Watch by itself can do almost all of this except for the camera recognition stuff.
Yeah.
And even that was hit and miss. Again, I think that's a software scale issue. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a can or cannot do. What I thought was really funny in the review were two things. One, at one point it said the feature is not available and then started going through a bunch of other information that appeared to be a hallucination of the LLM actually describing to the user the commands it was to do when things didn't work. Which, if you've played around with an LLM tool of any sort, you'll see sometimes when it kind of freaks out, and instead of providing you a yes or no answer or some appropriate value, it just repeats back to you what you gave it, or it repeats back to you what looks like the instructions it's trying to run. So that's a software bug.
Sure.
And then the other one that I thought was really kind of entertaining, and this to me is a testing issue, is it failed on an image recognition and recommended to the user that they go use, what is Google's image recognition tool?
Yeah, I don't remember the name of it, but I remember it.
I don't use it. I just don't use it. But it was like, ooh, that's an ouch, because that's free on your phone, which you probably have.
Yeah.
So all of this to say is it's a great example of someone trying to be very innovative. They sell it as a product, and it really should be a open beta. And I think for that, it's, you know, I'm currently spending a significant amount of money on what some people would consider an open beta, right, with the Vision Pro. I think Vision Pro is beyond that, and we'll get to why later on in a couple other articles. But my overall take of this article was, this was the best of the articles that I saw out there over the last week, because they just came out, and the embargoes are lifted, and the people who have been doing deeper reviews are finally able to put out their articles, right?
Yeah.
So I thought they did a great job and took it down to the level that is necessary for a product this early in its life cycle.
Yeah, and I'm with you. And I really wanted to be among those that were the first users of something like this, because I saw where the value is, and I saw where the privacy is, because this one, the pen doesn't wait or listen for a wake word, right? So it's not that AI agent that's now hoovering up everything. So there are so many things I think it does really right and well. Flip side of the occasion is the usability and the structure. And I'm reminded of the Mr. Mumbles conversations that we had here too, because it is very evident to everybody all around you that you have this thing on you, you're wearing it, and you're using it. And even though it's not taking pictures, you have to imagine that the user experience, well, it's not a user experience, the bystander experience, I don't know, the people who are observing it, are like, are you recording me? I don't know if I like this, right?
And it can take pictures, and it can do 15 second videos.
Yes, but you need to know that that doesn't happen without the person who's owning the device
actually doing something,
activating it, and that the device will then provide visual feedback that it is active and doing a picture or a recording. If you don't know those things, you think it's on all the time, and we're right back to the Google Glass issues that we had from years ago, too.
Yeah, I'm just imagining the average user, or the average person walking down the street, seeing somebody with one of these on, and do they know the difference between the green, the orange, and the yellow light?
There's no way that they would.
Exactly. So it could be recording the whole time, and they don't know, because they just don't know the device, right?
Right.
So
they'll assume that it is.
There's market training that needs to happen too, right?
Yeah. So speaking of training, I see what you did there. We have a really intriguing article from ZDNet talking about what has OpenAI and Google reportedly done to help train their large language models. And the short answer is, well, according to the article, they're leveraging YouTube videos, because they have millions and millions of hours of video that you could actually use for these kinds of things. And the first thing that went to my mind here, Michael, maybe not the first thing for you, but we just put up all of our Game of the Work podcasts on YouTube, which in theory should say, oh, now they could be ingestible in this way and treated as fair use in that way, because they're public and they're published by someone who wants to train their large language model.
Yeah, well, that's one thing, right? and of course, they talk about a year ago how the various cloud-hosted server tools were all slowly adjusting their terms of service.
Right.
To potentially give them rights. I did find it interesting that according to this article and their interpretation of YouTube's terms of service, if YouTube is doing the ingestion of the transcripts of these videos to be used for a purpose other than stated by the original license, mm-hmm. they could be in violation of their own license.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of a, you know, if you're going to put stuff on the cloud, you have to trust your cloud provider.
Right.
Is really what it comes down to. And when licenses and terms of services change, you also have to be aware of those and review them. Having said that, my other angle that my brain went to when I saw this article was, I've watched a lot of videos on YouTube with the closed captioning turned on,
uh-huh.
and some of it's really bad.
Probably a lot of it's really
bad. Auto-generated is really bad. Uh-huh. So if they're taking the transcripts of these videos that were auto-generated by other Google tools and they're bad and they're using that to train a large language model, it goes back to our entropy discussion we had a couple of weeks back. Are we dumbing them down?
Good thought.
Well, I don't know if it's a good thought. It is a thought.
Yeah. Don't know the answer, but boy, you know, it does make you think.
Yeah.
So
you know, it's funny because we've talked about this before about terms of service, especially for anybody who is a cloud provider that's storing data and that offers, you know, any type of backup or whatever feature. You have to have pretty sweeping broad rights granted to the host provider to allow them to do certain operational and maintenance things that if you are not familiar with those processes, you read the rights and you are immediately assuming the worst.
Correct.
So, anyway, interesting story. And I'm sorry, you were going to add to that.
Well, the thing I was going to add is that terms of service change. So when terms of service change
all the time,
you know, there ought to be an opportunity to say, well, I agreed to the former terms of service, and I do not agree to the new terms of service. So therefore, I am going to rescind the permissions that I've had. And there are great examples around blockchain that allow for that kind of thing to happen with smart contracts that will then automatically, you know, handle that kind of thing. Can you imagine the complexities, though, of saying, hey, you've got a YouTube channel that you've maintained for years, we'll just say, and the terms of service that come in now suggests that you're not willing anymore to allow that to happen. You know, so what's your recourse? You can say, I guess, deny, or, you know, it's auto accept. You're going to accept it if you do nothing, or you remove content. And if you exert the rights that you have over the content you've created as the content creator, you know, what does that then mean beyond it? So many, many questions.
Yeah, there was a deep discussion in the podcastosphere about using other people's podcast platforms, right? And if you don't control your own platform, do you really control your content? One of the reasons why we host our own website and our files are on that website. We don't actually upload them to Blueberry, which is one of our aggregating services,
right.
And other tools, because they're our files, they're our content. But if you're using some of the other online ones where everything's done for you online and it really makes it easier for you, and that service goes under, they may or may not give you time to pull your content down. If you're only on YouTube, for example, there may be some restrictions that don't allow you to post stuff on, you know, Threads. And I'm giving that as an example. I won't say there is. But any of the, what was it? Was it Pocket Cast or one of those other networks,
mm-hmm.
That did have restrictions of content between it and other services. And you get into these situations where you're going to either agree with their terms of services or lose your audience, right? And so your point on if they change over time, yes, you could, as a provider of a service, enable a very complex set of rules and automations, et cetera, so that as the terms change, the things that are uploaded during one set of terms and the things that are uploaded in the next set of terms behave differently. Or you can say, nope, it's all or nothing, and you put it back on the creator of the content. And I know which one I would probably do if I were running a major website that hosted content for people.
Well, you would need to have an attorney who worked 24/7 that could negotiate with the other attorney who's also working 24/7, and they're both agents, if you think about it in those terms, that are now coming to what will eventually be acceptable for both parties.
I kept thinking about that
negotiation happening.
Example.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I remember in the heyday of blockchain taking off and trying to be a business solution, the smart contract was the one that was always touted. And I kept thinking, you know, longer term with these contracts that change over time, yes, you can codify some stuff in the contract where the rules and the execution of those rules are in the software.
Right.
But you're eventually going to get into this level of complexity that you just won't be able to test it anymore.
Correct. Or it's going to be version control to the same level that you have to do for software, right? You've made a change in this clause. Today. When and why did you make that change? And now do you need to go back and evaluate, is that still needed or is it still necessary or is something changed to now invalidate that particular clause? It's like software. Exactly.
It's clauses all the way down.
So we have a fun article from the Wall Street Journal that deals with identity management. And sticking on the AI theme here, it's around deepfakes. And this is not just in the financial sector. This is really everywhere, anywhere. So your voice, my voice, our images, all kinds of things potentially could be harvested from YouTube and elsewhere, put into large language models, and then generated to create a interaction that says, hey, it's me, it's Michael, this is where I live, and I'm telling you I want to take out a loan. And these companies in financial services and elsewhere are having to innovate very quickly to recognize how this might emerge and evolve, and to take appropriate action to ensure that they're managing their exposure to risk and loss. Definitely a watch this space.
There was one quote in this article that I'm trying to refine when I read it last night. Yeah. And it's kind of where the show title comes up from. There's a quote that says, in many cases, the best defense of this generative AI threat is some form of generative AI on the other side. So, you know, building those tools, right? And the example that they talk about, at least in the financial services, was a test in Chase Bank where someone used a generated voice of someone to see if they could get around some of the transaction requirements. And the answer was yes. And so the level of complexity of adding in new requirements, like, you know, you got to get on a camera, you got to move your eyes a specific way as defined at runtime by the person talking to you on the phone, et cetera, are all kind of more complex biometrics that are trying to be added. But in any arms race, and this, you know, the security arms race is always that, the better you get, the more aggressive the attacks are, and vice versa. So, you know, you just need to put a generative AI on both sides and say, when you guys are done, tell me if I can take $20 out of my credit card or out of my ATM.
Again, network everything, basically.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
So we had this cool little post on Mastodon from Cat Salad that says, well, here's a way to upgrade your own defense from potential attackers. You need to watch it. It's a little Lego bot that's using AI to recognize through image recognition where people's feet are and then launch Lego pieces at their feet to so that they are going to step on them. It's really pretty fun.
As soon as I saw this, it was dedicated to you and Andy. Mostly to Andy because he would actually build this.
that would be super fun. So
very cool.
Bridging from AI into the VR space, I found this fun article that I thought of you, Michael, when I first looked at it from iMore. And the example here is a Dyson app for their vacuum cleaners that is not hoovering up data, it's hoovering up dust bunnies. And it allows you in the virtual experience to see where have you already vacuumed. So it paints the color of the floor a different color so that way you know you've vacuumed there already. I thought this is brilliant. It's probably not the killer app for a Vision Pro, but it's pretty darn brilliant, right? Isn't it?
And any AR headset, this would work with, right? To allow you to make sure you, I mean, what we do now is you look for the carpet lines.
Yeah.
But this does them virtually. I thought this was really cool. Now, if you're going to buy a Dyson, I mean, they're expensive vacuum cleaners. So I guess a $3,500 headset to make sure you vacuum correctly isn't that big of a stretch afterwards, huh?
But it's a business case you can justify to, you know, your home COO. You know, I really need to have the Vision Pro in order to do a good job vacuuming or mopping the floor or whatever. They must be there. So you talked about Vision Pro for a moment. Michael, I'm sure that this particular 9to5 Mac article about all the sensors in the Vision Pro did not surprise you one instant, did it?
Well, what I really enjoyed about this, it's a comparison of the Vision Pro, the Meta Quest, and what is it, the Meta Quest Pro, whatever super deluxe version was then immediately upstaged by the number 3. So the Meta Quest 3 and the Meta Quest Pro. And what they did is they used an industrial CT scanner to actually take all three devices and see how they are physically put together. What are all the sensors? What are all the components? How are they structured? How does everything kind of fit together without, you know, doing an iFixit teardown of ripping the thing apart?
Right.
And it is fascinating. It definitely explains a lot of the differences in both technical capabilities, in weight, in battery, etc., as well as in software capabilities of how certain things work, like the hand tracking and things of that nature. I found this to be just not only technically very interesting, but also from an artistic perspective, almost artistic, right? Just looking at how the device is physically laid out in three dimensions.
Yeah, the LumaField website has got this in even more detail than the embedded video. So head on over there. If this is the sort of thing that floats your boat, you need to take a look. Very cool.
Yeah.
Michael, talk to us about personas for a moment.
Yeah. So I have not been able to test out the new persona feature that was added in the latest drop for Vision OS, mainly because you need to have a friend with a Vision Pro.
Oh, so darn it!
This is my pitch to any of our listeners who have one. If they want to hit me up, I want to test this out. So, what they've done in the latest release, and there's a really great discussion on it. In a podcast I was listening to this past week, and so we have a link to that podcast in the show notes. Anyway, they've done a couple of things. One is they've taken the persona out of the constraints of the box in FaceTime, and they've extended it in such a way that we've all talked about for some time, which is you can now interact with up to 5 people in a joint virtual space using either games, right? So if you there's a great game in the Vision Pro that's a bunch of old board games, including Yahtzee, except they don't call it Yahtzee. They call it Yachts. Battleship, but I don't think they call it Battleship, right? Chess, etc. And It's fully 3D AR. You can drop the boards down on your table and play them with the other person, and it will position you appropriately. Do you remember, I think it was last summer when Apple came out with Freeform on the iPad?
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Maybe it was, and it was one, maybe it was even 2 summers ago. Anyway, and it was one of these things that we kind of threw up an example amongst the three of us, and it was like, eh, meh, right? But with the Vision Pro, you can basically treat it as doing whiteboarding together, and it will position you next to each other. And as you move things around, it kind of triangulates what you see, what I see, and what you're trying to show me, and will reposition things naturally so it's always right. So if you're pointing at the screen, I will see your hand literally pointing at the thing on the screen and moving things around. If you say, hey, come over here and turn, it will cause an appropriate turn. If you stand up, your avatar or your persona will actually physically move in space. And the sound, because of the directional sound, the spatial sound, will move appropriately. It is fascinating. And I really want to try it out because it kind of reminds me of those early days in Second Life when we set up, you had some spatial audio and we would, you know, go meet at the fire pit.
Yep.
And people would kind of sit around the fire pit, right? Except now, instead of just seeing everybody sitting around, you could literally be sitting around the fire pit. And the sound would come from the appropriate place. It's just, they've done all the things that we talked about from the videos that I've seen and from the discussions I've heard on these various podcasts of what we foresaw this could be like. And I can't wait to try it out.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Is the podcast an audio podcast, or is there a video component to it as well?
It's an audio podcast, and in their show notes, they take you to a couple of online videos that they took during it.
Cool.
The other thing, just real quick, before I know we got a couple of links left. One of the things, I think I was listening to ATP, the Accidental Tech Podcast, earlier this week, and one of the guys was playing around with the Vision Pro, and he recommended an app from Gucci. Well, I'm not a Gucci person, right? I don't wear a lot of high fashion. But there's a Gucci app on the Vision Pro that tells the story of a new designer and a fashion show and does product placement and stuff like that. But what they do is, again, a great example of what could happen. And that is, it's a 2D video, but as the video plays, certain 3D things start happening around you. Like at one point they talk about, they show you the video, they're like, we're setting up the fashion show, it's going to be at this outdoor plaza, and you see the plaza in the picture, and suddenly you're in the middle of the plaza, fully immersed in 3D. Mm-hmm. There's other points where they're talking about stuff, and you can see an interact button, and you can then, you know, grab the outfit or the design, look at it and pull it and resize, etc. And they talk about the designer's dog, and every once in a while the dog will just kind of walk by. And it sounds kind of cheesy at times, but it's really, really well done. And it's showing the power of what you could do in an immersive environment. And it kept going back to me, 2007, 2008, the vision that we were selling to other companies as we were looking in that space for business.
And maybe it would help them if they were just cleaning up the floors of those factories, you know, they could just, you know, that would be good.
Yeah, they could use the vacuum from Dyson.
All right. Well, we've got two last quick hitters to cover off before we close out for today. And Michael, you were telling me a little bit about this in our pre-show about something called the Nothing Door.
Yeah, this popped up in my feed this week, and I thought it was like the perfect game for you and Andy. Basically, it's an 8-bit game, and it's a dungeon crawler, so to speak, but it's a puzzle game, and you just have to leave the room with nothing.
Oh, it's an escape room sort of thing, huh?
It's an escape room where you have to leave the room with nothing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's great thing to just dip into. Takes about 30 seconds to get started, and you can probably waste a day on it if you keep going up in levels.
That's pretty funny. I love it.
We haven't had a game on the show in a very long time of what are you playing? And I thought this was perfect.
Yeah, they call it a one-bit game in the description. I wonder how that works.
Well, it's all black and white.
Oh, so maybe that's what it is. It looks 8-bit to me. I think they're selling themselves 7-bit short.
That's right. And it's running on a 64-bit device. So.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, yeah, that's only
there's a lot of
63
overhead.
Bits there.
Not overhead, but headroom.
You could do a lot with those extra 63 bits. All right. Well, the last thing that I've got here was a topic that we didn't get a chance to get to last week because we ran out of time, and we're rapidly running out of time here too. There was an article in Slate Magazine. I know that you and Andy talked a little bit about the Sims on a prior episode, a couple ones ago, but this article that came out beginning of April here talks about how you can play as the landlord now and deal with people as a landlord. And given all the challenges that happened during the pandemic time, and it was really problematic for so many people that were both landlords and renters and having to deal with the situation where people didn't have an income and couldn't pay the rent, and there were landlords that couldn't keep their buildings maintained and such. The fact that this is now in a simulation and it has been modeled in time into the Sims environment, and the way this article dealt with that situation was incredibly intriguing because it put people who are not landlords into the role of being a landlord. And what is it like to have those interactions with the tenants and vice versa, the tenants with the landlords. So I found this also just really fascinating when you are thinking about simulated experiences between people. So that was really the reason why I wanted to make sure that we had this in our show notes and had an opportunity to at least bring it forward for our listening audience. So I am excited to be signing off here in a few moments because I'm about to go see a production of Little Shop of Horrors. It's a high school production, and it's being done in a barn, which will be super deluxe cool. This is one of my favorite musicals, and I've been humming the soundtrack of it all weekend long, and really excited to see more of that. Anything on deck for you?
So I guess that gives Audrey a lot of room to grow in that barn.
It absolutely does. And the fact of the matter that there was a total eclipse of the sun earlier this week.
Yes.
All plays into it
quite appropriate.
Really nicely. Really nicely.
Well, I'm just excited to see what's coming next in the various software builds of the expensive betas that we're all playing with.
They are.
It should be a great week coming up. So if you are having a great week and you find a or an interesting article and you want to share it with us, how would they go do that?
Oh, well, you should just dial yourself over to gamesatwork.biz and you'll find all the different ways that you can connect with us, share your insights, share your inside jokes, or share reasons why you have a vacuum cleaner that's going to hoover up all the data that it needs to hoover up. So with that, we'll say see ya for this week. Come back again next week, and there'll be more gamesatwork.biz. Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us at our website at gamesatwork.biz.